for having me, Dean. My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And I heard tonight's speaker hasn't shared her story in a little bit, so I'm very grateful to be part of her return to that. Elaine B. is our speaker tonight.
I'm Elaine. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really not that nervous, but Alex is right. My sobriety date is August 3rd, 2002, and the last time I shared was 2003 as a speaker. So I probably am going to tell you more about what not to do for plenty of my story, but I have been sober for that long, and just recently redid the steps in a way that changed everything. So I try not to drag on too much about my past, you know, my growing up. But first I want to thank, even though the women aren't here tonight, a lot of them from Noonan, I just moved here from Florida in November, and the women in Noonan were so welcoming to me. And just that little bit where they say, like, are you new? Because I wasn't going to say anything exactly, or it was hard for me. I was coming here after I separated from my husband of 36 years, and my daughters were up here too, so that made it a little bit easier. But just they reached out to me, and you said, are you leaving already? Because that used to be my thing, come late, leave early, which is not recommended. And I really feel like I'm happy to share more of my history with these ladies, and hopefully the other women, like, I have two sponsees here now, and not here, but they'll listen to it later. So anyway, so this is, I'm a miracle right here. I grew up on a farm in Oregon. I have four brothers and four sisters. One brother left now, but my dad was, I guess you wouldn't say he's alcoholic, but he was drunk a lot. It was scary in our house. It was kind of funny because my mom had four kids, and then I'm in the second group of five, and he kept telling us, I only wanted four. So you didn't have a lot of love feeling. My dad never really talked to me, and my mom was so busy cooking, cleaning, and so we didn't have emotions going in the house. So I was cared for, and I had nice clothes. I mean, she sewed our clothes. I didn't feel like I was working, you know, we had to work in the summer, but I didn't mind it. I went to Catholic school, like a lot of us, and the best part about that was in third and fourth grade, we had the same teacher, a nun, and she was new, kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember Sound of Music, there was Maria, and it was like that, Sister Benita, and she was like, God is love, he loves you, no matter what, you come back to him, whereas the other teachers, not so much my teachers, but the other students might say, God was a fearing God, and you can't, don't come back to, you know, he'll punish you. That stuck in my head, that no matter what, even if I don't talk to God, he's there waiting for me to come to him. So that was a helpful thing. The no emotions at home was a thing. And then this is the part, like, I have to say a little bit, I'm going to be kind of vague, but there was, like, trauma in my house. And I learned a skill to disassociate things that were going on, and then I could also compartmentalize it. So it was like, that's at home, that's bad. I'm at school, that's good. And it kind of was detrimental later in my life, but also good because I could function. And, you know, I went to school, people liked me, I was popular, I got good grades. And at home it was like, you know, and my whole family is like that. We're quiet, I had to really work on, am I mad? Is this a good thing? Our emotions, you would not know there was 9 kids in our house. We were just like, okay. I didn't really want to drink because I saw what happened with my dad drinking, and my 2 brothers were heroin addicts. They were older, like 10 and 9 years older than me. My sister joined a cult. She's been in it for 50 years. We get to see her every 7 years. You know, there's a lot of stuff in a big family. Anyway, so when I was 15, my friend took me to a cabin, and she had beer. I didn't want to drink the beer. But instead of saying, I don't want to drink the beer, I'm like sipping it and pouring it out. And that's part of my story the whole time. I can't say, I don't want this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to fit in. And so I feel like I drank it. And then the next couple months later, they had a tea party for me. And we had, I don't know if you guys remember, Annie Green Springs Peach Creek wine. And we had like shots. We were like in a tea party. And like, they made me get drunk. And I got so sick and felt terrible the next day. I'm like, why do people want to do this? I mean, it's not that story where people say, I took that first drink and I felt like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be. It wasn't. I really didn't want to, but slowly but surely, I got used to drinking, and we had Schlitz Stout malt liquor, and that's what we drank. I mean, my dad, we had a hop, you know, there was hops on our farm. My dad would only drink Heineken or Pabst. We put salt in the Pabst. I don't know why, but does that sound weird? That does sound weird, right? Okay, anyway, and now it's a big craft brewery place, you know, all out there in Oregon. Anyway, so I started working at Dairy Queen to get off the farm, and somebody brought in Speed. And we were behind the ice cream machine doing Speed, and we were the best workers. I mean, what's to do? And I was like, when there's nobody there, I'm like, okay, there's gum under the table. So I was like, I mean, the boss thought we were the greatest. So I knew right then that I liked the energizing things. And I didn't want to not be in control. I didn't really like drinking because I didn't want to lose, you know, I wanted to be conscious. So, and then the other thing I remember is, like, I went to a party in high school still. There was a senior there, and he was having a party, and he was popular, and he didn't drink. And I remember going, like, how does that work? How can he people still like him, and he's not doing what everybody else is doing? That was so unconscious to me of how I could do that. So anyway, and then I remember when I started drinking enough, I would really drink. I'd either get sick or blackout. And just one example is, like, I went to my senior prom, and the next day I woke up and I had this bruise, huge, and I didn't know how I got it. And I guess it turns out that I got up on the stage with the band and with the tambourine. I was like, you know, the whole time that I'm singing, I'm saying, Tom Goldman, I love you. And that wasn't my date. You know, and it was ugly, and I don't remember any of it. And so that was bad. So anyway, the end of high school. See, this is like backwards too. Like I've heard people talk about this. They can be alcoholics, and then when they're sober, they find some other addiction. It could be, you know, food, sex, shopping, internet. So I'm a little backwards. So in high school, the end of my high school year, I got an eating disorder, and this was in '76, so it was kind of before they even knew about it, what it was. They didn't have a name for it then. I think in '79 they finally diagnosed. I mean, they made it a thing. Anyway. So that was my addiction at first. And anyway, so I went to college. I was, like, doing music, and I didn't like men. I mean, I was just afraid of men. And they gave me, my job was leading the men's choir at the penitentiary. Oh, my gosh. So right away, I'm like, I don't want to do music anymore. I'm done. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was modeling, but just like junky model. I mean, like, I went to Cinderella Charm School, and she was telling me, you're so great, and that was kind of fed my disease of eating. And it kept me away from people. I didn't want to date anybody. Just isolating. So anyway, so then I decided I was going to leave college, and I got a job with the airlines, and I got the job. So I was flying to Atlanta. This is kind of funny because I remember thinking, this is going to be like the Clampets, if you guys remember that, the Beverly Hillbillies. And I'm landing, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, it's a city. I mean, I was so, you know, there was not the internet then. And I'm a farm girl, and I hadn't even been on a plane. And you know, for my interview, I went, and I don't even know why I got the job. So I'm 20, and I had never been to a bar because the drinking age is 21. And they took me to the bar, and I got pina colada. And then they taught me how to smoke. And so anyway, so then I get placed in Miami, and this is where it all starts. So my one roommate is from Dallas, and one's from Boston. And they're about my age, maybe a couple years older. So the Dallas girl is going to go to a sorority alumni party with her little jello mold, and my Boston party person is going to go to a disco to meet her sugar daddies. Bepia Gogo, Charlie Tuna, Kevin from Heaven, and Fabio. So I'm like, I guess I'll go this way. So, oh my gosh. I mean, I'm just lucky I'm alive. I mean, really, it was crazy. Drug dealers, and it was kind of cool to do drugs, certain drugs that there's like Miami Vice time, and everybody's sniffing, and it was like, it was heaven. So I could stay skinny, and I still didn't really want to drink, and I'm just happy I'm still alive. And I was a good worker, too, because it was different then in the airlines, too. They didn't check our stuff when we got on. We went in the secret way, and I mean, we were not always doing things, but you could. And even passengers would go into the bathroom and have, like, a spoon in their ear, and it's all cool, and it just was very accessible. And people would drink on the layovers, and I just joined in because that's what you kind of got to do, even though I didn't really want to. Well, here you go again. Every time I drink a little bit, I would black out. And I remember I would have dreams, not because it's God giving me a dream. I would be talking, this is my dream. I'm talking to them, and I look down, and I have no clothes, I'm naked. And then I knew again. I said something I shouldn't say, and the next day they're like, ooh, you didn't. So right away, I'm like, I shouldn't be drinking. So I pretty much stopped that too. I could do it on my own then. And so I'm not an alcoholic because I'm not drinking that much. So anyway, what happened next? Okay, so the eating was really bothering me. I was isolating. I was lying. I was telling people I was doing all these other things and I really was going to be home alone or I'm going to be exercising. I wouldn't eat for 3 days. It was taking over my whole life. And like drinking could too. I just really didn't think it was a problem then. So I put myself in a rehab. And their rehab then was like, you're just being weak. Think of other ways to be crazy and numb. And I just thought, that really took me down a different path. But I'm just weak. And I'm a loser. And I'm a liar. I mean, I still needed the 12 steps to know that I was powerless. But I didn't have it then. So anyway, So then I met my husband, and then he was a normal person, but, we drank a little bit, did a little drugs, but nothing huge. So this is the clincher for me. I didn't like my mother-in-law, but she was annoying. And I was talking to my girlfriend, and she said, well, why don't you have a drink before she comes? And I'm like, oh, that's okay. And I think it was because I drank for a reason. And I tell you, it worked. And then you know what? I couldn't stop. It just was, I don't know if it was the mental mindset of it, or it was going to come, I knew it. But I literally couldn't stop. And I went to my first AA meeting, myself, and they said, how long have you been drinking? I go, 6 weeks. And they were like, you can't be. And I go, well, I really can't stop drinking. I just wanted it. It was like that craving and like people talk about when they first drink, that they felt normal. But I think I was 30. That's my story, which kind of it sounds strange to me even. But anyway, so then I got pregnant, and then I really knew, and I had to go to rehab again. And it was easier to get into rehab at that time. And, I told my gynecologist, I'm drinking a glass of wine at night. He goes, oh, that's okay. And I'm like, a glass of wine is like a bottle and something. And I knew it wasn't okay. So I went to rehab, and then they had eating disorder and 12-step. And I came out of there, and I was pumped. But, I was pregnant, I had a baby, and it was so easy. And that's another reason why I kept myself on the outside. But, so then after a year of having her, then I thought, it was easy to be sober, so I started drinking again. So then, I know, that was after a year. So then I got pregnant again, and it was okay. So I stayed clean for 8 years, and not really, just going to meetings. Like, when I first went to meetings, I was even drinking in the meetings because I wasn't really alcoholic when I wasn't pregnant, after when I had my first child. So I'm kind of getting mixed up. Anyway, So I don't know if I really believed I was alcoholic because that was so, you know, I quit for my kids. So, okay, so I haven't been really drinking for 8 years, and my husband and I are going out, and he says, I think you can have a drink. And I said, I think I can too. So I drank, and then the next night we had, or not next night, the next week we had some champagne, and I got drank so much I got sick. So we had a disco party at our hospital when we turned 40, and there was so much booze left, and then I just, downhill. For 4 years. I was in and out of the rooms, and I felt like I want to do what I want to do. If I had a different husband, we would be drinking normal like the regular people do. And so, anyway, so one night he came home, it was my birthday, August 2nd, 2002, and I was in the bathroom throwing up, and the kids are there, and he just said, I'm done. So we've been married 15 years, and my daughters, they were 9 and 12, and I had been trying for 4 years to try to do it on my own. And they knew, like, oh, how come you're in this? How come you're in the bedroom? Well, because I'm drinking. And, you know, he banished me to the room. And so they knew, and it was the hardest thing. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? I'm giving up my family, my marriage, to drink by myself. I mean, I wasn't in the bars. I was, like, drinking to have fun doing the laundry. And I was driving drunk with the kids. I remember I rear-ended somebody. I drove off. I mean, I really could have been, I could have killed somebody. I could have killed my kid. I mean, nothing happened to me. You know, I was never in jail. Kept my job. I was worked for 42 years. So I had a great time. And, I don't know. God was watching out for me. And I only prayed to God really when I was in trouble. When my husband left, that was kind of his MO, like every couple of years I'm done, and not just from drinking, but because he always said he was better than me. But when I was sober for the 8 years, I guess I was supposed to tell you how I could stay sober through things. My brother stood in front of a train, my younger brother, and I stayed sober to that. Actually, I started going to church in the middle of there. I didn't say that because I'll get mixed up, but that left me with a lot of guilt because I left him. You know, I just knew I had to get off the farm. I didn't want to stay there. My family was just this. And so he took his own life. My older brother died in a car accident driving drunk. And this, our family, we're still not really that close to each other, but the trauma that we had with my father was pretty devastating. And my mom still stayed with him, and that really bothered me. Even though, I don't really want to go into that. Anyway, so I went to the meeting, and when I lost my kids, or I didn't lose my kids, my husband was moving out, and I went in sobbing to the AA meeting. And I swear, I felt like for the first time I heard that on page 30, it says, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And I swear that was the first time I heard it. Because I've been going in and out of rooms, sitting in the back. I don't need a sponsor. I'm okay. I got a sponsor, and she was mean. She was like a teacher, and you know. But then she had two other friends that were my sponsor buddies, their sponsee buddies, and we did the steps together, and we did it pretty good. It was like, you know, I did the four step with her, but mostly the four step we did with her was like I had to list all the things I did bad, and she said I did worse, and that's all. That's what I remember anyway. And not really getting any benefit out of it, except for I feel like, okay, I got back my chest. There's nothing inside of me. But not really changing anything. And I don't think that's how the steps are really done, at least the way I did it the last time. So I remember hearing people tell this truth. They were being honest about it. Women were saying, I stayed in bed for 3 days, and even men were crying, and I was like, men have feelings? I just, you know, it's like, I really didn't think. I only went out with married men, because who cares, and they had to have money, and they're married. That was it was crazy. Not when I was married, but when I was single. And I just didn't trust anybody, because when I was growing up, I could just be nice and smile. And I'm a good pretender, and that was like, I was a perfect flight attendant, because, you know, you can step on me, get mad at me, and just, it was a people pleaser, and And I liked it. That was perfect. I could have a terrible night at home, and I could go to work, and that's home. And, you know, it saved me, but it also kind of stunted my growth. But when I came into AA, I hope I make some sense. When I came to AA this last time with my sponsor, I mean, just to be honest and to be vulnerable and real, it was like, what? I thought this was so unreal that the outside world was all fake. AA is the only thing real. And I was like, everybody needs to trust us. Oh my gosh, this is a great thing. And then my sponsor, she got married and moved. And then one of my sponsee buddies, she relapsed. And I just kind of drifted. And I would come to meetings, like, now I have 10 years, but nobody really even knew me. I'd get my medallion, and I would go to meetings in other countries. You know, I was working, I was kind of up in school, but I didn't talk, and I wasn't growing, that's for sure. And I started going to church. This is going to be good enough for me. And I was kind of fake in church, like, things are happening in my house now. And I was like, yeah, it's fine, it's fine. I was turning into my mother. I was like, and I used to say to my mom, just, why don't you divorce Dad? He's, like, ruining our house. And she just wouldn't. And I thought, this is me. I'm like my mommy. And I'm not honest. And my kids kind of had fun and say, like, Mom, would you want us to be married to this person? But, you know, this is the other thing. Like, if you don't share stuff, your perspective, for me, can be not real. I mean, I'm hearing things at church and for other people, like, turn the other cheek. Just, you know, love them. And if I talk to other women, like in AA or some other women, they might say, you know, that's disrespect, or that's not okay. And I mean, I discovered that later, way later. I mean, I'm 65. I should have known this later, but actually, I'm kind of getting ahead a little bit. But so anyway, we moved to Naples. I quit from my job. It was like COVID. We both retired. It was going okay. So we moved to Naples, and I go to this one meeting, a women's AA meeting, and I hear these women that have like 20, 25 years, and I think I had 20 then, and they were like, until I really did the work, my life was like, ugh. And I thought, that's me. Like, I'm not really happy, and I'm just like kind of, you know, not, I don't have that connection with God I used to have. It was like, I was saying I was praying, and I was lying. I wasn't getting on my knees in the morning and the evening, all that stuff I knew that I was supposed to do before. I wasn't doing it. So I went through the steps again, and I started, it was in 20 years, and I knew that, you know, God was the only thing keeping me sober. I was doing no work at all. And so when I did the work with this last woman, you know, we did the four steps and talked about it, and she was like, what was your pattern? You know, and I was like, well, I was... Yeah, what are you afraid of losing or not getting? So I was like, I avoid people. I'm a people pleaser. I'm a liar. I'm relying on myself and not God. I mean, I had this control over other people. Like, the reason you're not happy is because of me. I was just like, it was looking at the patterns. Like, what was making me feel bad? And it was just all in here. Just not being able to speak up. Just letting people walk all over me. And then I would get that resentment of like, well, either feeling like I'm not good enough or... I'm not explaining myself very well, but just going through this steps and seeing my pattern, and she's like saying, Elaine, you're delusional, you're not judging this right, and it really saved me. I could start to speak up, I was honest, and I just liked myself so much better. I used to come into the room and go like, you know, it's like the self-centeredness. I'm like, I'm not self-centered because I help people, but I'm like going, okay, they're looking at me. And then they're looking at me and they're saying bad things. It wasn't like they're looking at me. It's like, oh, gosh, I'm not good enough. And like now, I could be saying that everybody's bored. They're going like, oh, my God. But I'm not really thinking about that because I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. And it's okay if you're bored. And I'm just doing what, you know, I'm getting out of my comfort zone. And you got to be uncomfortable to be comfortable. And I know all those phrases, you know, that God is in the pause. Pick up the feather, put down the bat. Put down the bat, pick up the feather. All those things. I try to remember some of those, but it's been so hard for me because at this point in my life, I have to say, set a boundary. I mean, we're so much smarter. My kids are in their 30s, but they're like, you know, a trauma bond, set a boundary, and all those were, even the Me Too thing. I mean, everything is so much better now. I mean, the women nowadays, we think it's a lot better. I don't know what I was going to say, but, you know, I'm more present. Like, I know that I'm conscious, like every night, okay, so now every night I do, I get in the morning, before I get out of bed, or actually get up on my knees right away, and I say the Serenity Prayer and the third step prayer, and I am cognizant or conscious of God and everything. I'm trying to do what God wants me to do. And before I could just, you know, it was part of my, not preservation, but my skills. Like I said, I can disassociate. Like, you could say bad things to me, and then I can just go on. And I want to be aware and say, that's not okay. And really, my head was up here all the time. I missed a lot. And that's why I had to really kind of write stuff down. And I didn't do a very good job of keeping on track. But I just think the best thing I can tell people is to really get in and do the work, to not be on the outside. Because I got to tell you, there's people that have like 3 years that are so much better centered in a program and in God's will than me. And I've just been blessed to have, you know, God's watching over me and just keep me sober. And this last couple of years, I'm not a good speaker, but one-on-one with somebody or in a small group, I can share. And I do have wisdom from, you know, my past. And it was like, I love analogies. And the one was that, you know, if you were a surfer in the ocean, you see all these big waves, you love it. But if you're a swimmer, not a very good swimmer, that scares you. And part of being sober and being able to help people is like, I want to be the surfer. You know, I can help people enjoy what they're going through, even if it's a trial. And I just feel like, I'm not a whiner, but sometimes you just got to share some bad things that happen so people can realize that they can get through it. And the best way to get through it is to share it, was to ask for help. I don't like to ask, well, in the past, I didn't like to ask for help because I'm okay. I'm fine. And it did such a disservice to my whole family to let things continue that shouldn't have been continuing. And, but, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like, that was the past, you know, there was good and bad, easy, hard, but it's my life. And I'm just so grateful that I'm still here and I have so much to be grateful for. And that's the other part of my daily thing, is to have a gratitude list and with all my prayers. That's really all I have. I think I talked too fast, but Tim said I wanted to, I don't have to open it for questions, but I told him like when we used to speak in Florida, somebody would talk for like 20 minutes. And then people would say, oh, so I can really relate to that, or ask a question. So I thought if you guys wanted to, if anybody had anything to share, like that you could relate, or maybe some input, maybe you can tell me something. I don't know. Would that be okay? Anybody?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody to go for it, or should you raise your hand, or whatever you think? Come on. Tag, should you do tag thing? Okay, tag.
I can relate to 90% of your story.
Oh, good.
Really awesome. Thank you for your service. And like you, my drinking began trying to fit in. And so I felt like I fit in when I was drunk. And I went from sober to blackout real freaking quick every damn time. Sorry for something. And that's all I got.
Thank you.
I
don't
know your analogy about the waves, because ironically enough, some years ago I was drowned in a rip current, and thankfully, two guys, I saw the wave coming, and by that time my feet had already come off the ocean floor, and two guys were within arm's reach to pull me out of that wave. And the lifeguard had already gotten off of his post running down the beach to come get me. But today, I use that analogy of almost drowning. My alcoholism equating that to the wave that took me under. And the guys and the people who were on standby to pull me out of that wave, the 12 steps, my sponsor, people I've been able to connect with in my recovery or on my recovery journey, pulling me out of that wave and keeping me on the bank. And so
I like that.
I love how you use that analogy And it just brought back to my remembrance how that wave and alcoholism almost took me under not to resign. So,
I like that. You reminded me of one more thing. I have another analogy that somebody was telling me. I don't know. It was like if you're planning like a two week trip to the beach with your family, and you're so excited, and on the very first day, you get a flat tire, and you're in the middle of nowhere, and it takes all day. You got to just get a hotel that's kind of going into the budget, and so then you finally get to the beach. So are you going to let that one day and a half ruin your trip to the beach? No, you're going to enjoy it. And they were talking about us when we complain about, you know, our early years in life. Are you going to let that affect every, you know, the rest of your years? And, I mean, it's not really a great analogy, but that sticks with me, too, that, you know, the past is past. We're going to learn from it and, you know, that's what life is, good and bad, and we're here to make the most of what we have, right? So, anyway, but that was, I like that. I like your analogy better than mine. Okay, right? Ellen, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Ellen, I'm Ellen.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I really associated with your relationship with your father, because that's a lot of what happened with me. And sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't feel like that I can tell my story because I didn't have a good childhood outside of him, you know. I mean, my sister, my brother, my mom, you know, were all good, but outside of that, you know, like I didn't have anything really traumatic happen. But it was traumatic to me. And it was something that pretty much almost took me out. And, you know, you were saying, like, it could be so. A friend of mine always says, you know, I don't understand because, like, somebody can say 15 wonderful things about you and one person say that one bad thing and you're going to hang on to that bad thing for a month. And he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He's right. And I do. I mean, like I said, 15 people can say, oh, you're so sweet, you're so, you know, you're funny, whatever. But that one person says that one thing wrong and I'm just going to go unravel. And so that's the way I lived my life forever. And the drinking is what made me feel like it was okay, like I didn't have to worry about that. You know, and when I was drinking, I'd be like, I don't know what you're saying. But in reality, I was over there like, because I knew that it would make me forget. And it's, AA saved my life. But it also has helped me with character defects, which I don't think I'll ever get rid of. I think there's someone in here that Rusty that always says something like, you just have to tweak them. You never get rid of them, you just have to tweak them or be.
Right.
But what this room has taught me is to recognize them. And now that I recognize them, and I do have people that love me, care about me, sponsors, sponsors, friends, you know, that help me through that, I'm so grateful for them. Because now people can say to me what I need to hear, and I accept it the way I'm supposed to accept it. So I really relate to that whole situation, you know, the positive thing.
I think I know too that the character defects they were saying that, and I believe this, that it's really, I think God tricks it for us, you know, and the things that were negative, not always can be positive, but a lot of them. And I know my sponsor will be telling me, like, you're on a pity pot, and snap out of it, and, you know, I need people like that are going to tell me, like, your character defect is coming up again. But it's gotten so much better, right, Ellen? I mean, I think it's, like, it's pretty amazing. Just
be able to recognize it beyond anything.
Right. I mean, part of it was like, just avoid it. Like, I don't want to hear conflict, so I just, you know, and it would, I could be passive aggressive. I'm like, I'm letting it go. So it's getting so much better, right? Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks, Sharon.
Go ahead, Ellen.
I'm Alex from Alcoholics. I like how you kind of formed selfishness because I was so codependent in the way I put others' needs before my own, I thought I couldn't be selfish, and I had to understand that that's how I made myself feel good, and what I felt and had to say, what I thought was always more important than what anybody else had to say or think or feel. So it was, I liked it, you kind of framed it like that, because I had to realize that I am selfish, just not necessarily in the most traditional sense.
Right. I think we all are a little self-centered, right? That's true. Go ahead.
I'm not
alcoholic. Okay.
I love what you said when you're talking about getting out of your comfort zone, because there's a few people in here that when I first came in, and I wouldn't share, I wouldn't raise my hand, I wouldn't greet. I sat in the back, I had a baseball cap on, I had a hoodie with
that's me.
And there we go. And so, like, for example, there's an 11 o'clock meeting on Saturday morning. I think it's 11. And somebody asked me to read, and I ended up handing it to the person next to me. And so when the guy who was leading the meeting, he looked over and he's like, that's not who I asked to read. I was like, that made it even worse.
Oh, gosh, right.
Because, you know, funny, but, you know, now I'm able to share. I'm able to talk. I'm able to, you know, do things that, again, are out of my comfort zone. And I'm still working on it, but I'm not completely out of my comfort zone. But it's because of AA, you know, and with the changes that I've made, just like you. And I've got the same thing with my father. Well, he's passed, but my biological father, so I get it. It's a great story. Thank you so much.
Well, see, all this feedback is good for me, too. But, even like sharing, like some people that can have a couple years that they jump right in. I'm always in awe of them. They want to be at the door greeting. I'm like, oh, and actually, one other thing you're reminding me is like, you know, at those parties for people, the losers in AA that don't have anything to go for Christmas. I mean, I went to one of those when I was the loser, and it was so much fun. But I just feel like I don't want people to think I don't have anything to do, and they can't go to a Super Bowl party. And you know, I started doing that and just recently, and it was like, it was so fun. I don't know why I thought, you know, we're not losers, even if you're just alone. But really, you know, that's why I can't share, because I should be so much smarter with all these years. And I'm just, you know, that's what happens if you don't share for 20 years. You don't get any better. Anyway, any questions? Go ahead.
Hello. I'm Tara, alcoholic.
Hi, Tara.
Hi. I really related to, like, you said when you were going in school and you had that really awesome teacher who was just like, God is love, and that was so awesome. But I think I had that other teacher, like, you know, like God is, you know, if you just do right, you're good, yeah. And then, like, I had abusive childhood growing up with my dad who raised me, and so that just kind of backs up the idea of just God is just this mean, you know, you're not good enough, or there's nothing, you know. So I completely like love and relate to what you said about, you know, those unworthy feeling, that rejection. It's like, I believe it's like, you know, we go through these things like very spirit of rejection. I'm really thankful to have AA and like being in community with people like who understand, because it's like we're replacing a spirit of rejection with a spirit of like acceptance. Like God is love, and it's like so really awesome to experience that.
Yeah,
and
nice.
I really loved everything you guys say. And you don't think, you know, you did great, but you did a really great job.
Yeah. No, and I hope you guys get it while you're young, you know, for real. I mean, not just showing up and being in the back. I mean, you got to do the work and, you know, just hope that sticks with you. Okay. All right, thanks, you guys. All right, from farm girl to surfer girl. Thank you, Elaine. Good job.
Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
I used to hate my pain. Avoid the feelings like a winter rain. I'd run away, hiding the hurt with a drink or an angry word, until the day I could not deny the healing calling from deep inside. It was a love that was here to mend. My broken heart could be my friend. On the other side, I will rise above a mountain here to climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, there is peace beneath the pain. A tender tear that I can't explain, washing away the fearful wounds, bearing a light for my life to bloom. And on the other side, I will rise above a mountain I must climb. As I grow, I stumble and I fall, but I am grateful for it all. On the other side, on the other side, I live my dreams, finding joy. Stumble and I fall, but I am grateful.